Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Tap into the pulse of today's young folks with the Politics Rap Teen. The panelists are IB students from Rickards High School. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Joining me via Zoom, I welcome, would you like to introduce yourself, Jenna?
Hi, my name is Jenna John. I'm a junior at James S. Rickards High School and a student producer for 411 Teen.
Glad to have you.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Hi. My name is DT Tula. I am a sophomore at James S. Rickards High School.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you because this is being taped and this is the day before the school is out. So I appreciate you taking the time. Governor Ron DeSantis recently signed a new law requiring a half a credit personal finance class before graduation. The law seeks to rectify a lack of financial literacy in the state and prepare students for the difficult economic challenges they may confront ahead. The requirement will take effect for ninth grade students entering the 2023-24 school year. Florida is the 11th state to adopt a financial literacy requirement as a standalone course. The new personal finance class would teach financial skills such as completing loan applications, computing interest rates, balancing checkbooks, computing federal income tax, and additionally understanding the types of investment and bank accounts will be taught. What do you think of this law? Where do you sit? I'll start with you, Jenna. How do you feel about having a new extra credit, half a credit, in personal finance?
I'm not going to lie. I have not heard about this. I may just be uneducated.
Yeah. Well, it's happened, but, okay?
But I think, I don't know if there's any like cons to the proposition, but just from the basics of it, it sounds like it could be definitely useful. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of college students and myself included, I'm a rising senior, and I know for a fact that once I hit college and become an adult, I will know nothing about how to take care of myself financially.
Okay.
I have taken economics classes, but nothing has uh-huh. ever taught me anything about taxes or how to do my own taxes, at least, and how I can optimize my financial status, or if that makes sense. Yes.
Yes.
So I think this class would definitely help the upcoming high schoolers in getting prepared for college and their adulthood.
Okay. Great. And even though you haven't heard of it, there has been a move. And as I said, Florida is the 11th state to adopt financial literacy. There's been a problem with students nationwide graduating and not knowing anything about finances as far as, you know, completing applications and interest rates and all of this. So it is a good thing, I think. Aditi.
I really think that this law is a good idea. I'm really glad that it was implemented because right now in high school, or like not even just high school, but like schools in general, we are learning a lot like of our basic subjects like math, science, reading, all of that. And mm-hmm. while it is useful, I don't necessarily think that it's extremely useful for, you know, adulthood. And like, mm-hmm. you know, getting to know about our economy and things like that. And I feel like this financial like literacy class could help us with like budgeting and, you know, investing and like saving ourselves from debt, and like just it's just like laying the foundation for us to start building strong habits like earlier rather than later on in the long run.
Well, I applaud both of you on your responses, because the items that you identified as being beneficial are the items identified nationwide that have been lacking. So that's good to hear that your insight and your understanding of the problem is very clear. The law changes the graduation requirement of 8 elective credits to 7.5. Do you have any response to that? Do you have any feelings about that? Does it matter? Hello? I mean, and you may not. And that's fine, too. But just to give you a little bit more information about the law, it does change the graduation requirements from 8 elective credits to 7.5. So you're a half credit less.
So I don't know if I'm just confused, but are they taking away a different requirement and replacing it with this financial literacy class?
I can't answer that. That I don't know, okay?
Interesting.
All I know is that in doing this, it makes it, I guess it takes away, it takes away something, obviously, because mm-hmm. the credits go from 8, it's been reported that the credits go from 8 to 7.5. And that hasn't been a criticism, that's just been an observation. So right. I didn't know how you felt about it. Because it sounds like you don't get any financial education at this point.
Yes, I don't really see why anyone would have any complaints to mm-hmm. having less requirements to graduate, unless they are removing an essential class, which I'm going to assume that they're not.
Oh, no.
and I think financial literacy courses would definitely be very beneficial in the long run. And the short run too, because if you're graduating as a senior and mm-hmm. you're turning 18, then I guess it depends on your household, individual households. But I know a lot of students will start doing their own taxes and doing their own budgeting, like Aditi right. said, once they hit that adult age and go off to college and are on their own. So I think regardless, I don't really see any issue why this lesser requirement would have any problems for the students or for the overall like student population in the long run.
Okay.
Oh, also adding on to that, as Jenna said, like I don't think it's necessarily a big deal that they're shifting, they're removing half a credit. Especially because now that they're incorporating this financial literacy class, uh-huh. I think it'll be a lot more beneficial in a way because, one, it's like kind of like you're working smarter, not uh-huh. harder.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it'll give students, I feel like there would be more of a higher graduation rate in a way. Because you won't have to take as many classes, but then also you are taking like the right classes that you need for to be successful in the long run.
Exactly. Exactly. I know that's one of the basic premise behind it. What they're finding is when kids graduate, and whether they go into the work world or they go into higher education, there is a major deficit in the financial area of education. And not only, helping them to write checks, even though you don't write checks these days, you use your card, you still have to balance how much money you have. And a lot of college students get swayed with multiple charge a card, MasterCard, Visa, because they will swoop on you when they find out that you are in college. And consequently, then, when these students are graduating, they have huge, huge credit card bills. So it seems like it would be a plus-plus all the way around because they're graduating with a real deficit. And with this, you will know at least some of the basics about financial literacy. So I don't see how it could go wrong. And I don't know that others are saying that either. I just wanted to get your opinion because this is an area where there is no real education provided in the schools at this point on financial literacy. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I would also like to note that, like, as a high schooler, as a young person, you know, we are introduced to, not necessarily introduced, but when we go shopping or, like, when we spend time outside, we find things that catch our eyes and are like, oh, I have to buy this mm-hmm. or I have to buy that. But we don't necessarily think, oh, is this really necessary for me? Or do I just like want it? And I don't think we think about money in those terms.
Mm-hmm. And you're right on top of it because that is one of the problems. You know, if you've never had done anything about balancing and being careful about how much you spend, how much comes in and how much goes out, then you are a target for disaster. And that's what we're finding out, particularly with students who are going on, that they know nothing about financial literacy. And this is drowning them. They leave and they're drowning in debt. So, you know, your observations, your insights are just great because that's exactly where the problems lie, not knowing. And you haven't been taught. For example, back in 1902, we were taught that stuff. We were taught how to, when I went to school, in high school, we were taught how to write checks. We were taught how to balance our checkbook. We were taught how to figure out interest and make sure what happens when we write a check that bounced. All of that kind of information we knew when we were graduating, okay? So, you know, I don't know. We've gotten away. It's interesting. We've gotten away from some of the traditional things, but we're going back to them. Just like when we look at technology and study there, that is a change. So I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts. We'll get back to you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and families and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with the Politics Rap team. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return shortly. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I've got two dynamic students from James S. Rickards High School International Baccalaureate. This hour, we are looking at various events and laws that relate to the political arena. Another, Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill that will require school students to observe Victims of Communism Day on November 7th. This is effective immediately, so you will experience this next year, academic year. It honors the 100 million people who have fallen victim to communist regimes across the world. Florida students will learn the evils of communism. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm sorry, you said that the students would be learning about...
It's called Victims of Communism Day. The law will become effective November 7th, immediately November 7th, 2022. What it does is it honors the 100 million people who have fallen victim to communist regimes across the world. And that the Florida students will learn the evils of communism. And, you know, I wanted to know what your thoughts were on this new requirement that you will observe Victims of Communism Day. Let me ask you this. How is communism addressed in school now? What do you look at? Is it addressed at all?
I think in a lot of our history classes, we do speak of communism and we learn the ideology. Mm-hmm. And I think I have heard about this day. And I remember that the governor's kind of reasoning behind it was that not enough students have enough information about these different political ideologies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I disagree with that.
Okay.
I mean, I suppose that some students who don't take the specific history classes that we do may, like world history is essentially where we would learn communism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the term like evils of communism would be appropriate, considering that communism in its ideology is not necessarily that evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when these countries try to apply these ideologies in reality, they just take extreme measures, or those measures have very severe consequences. So I think kind of recognizing these negative impacts is fine. I just don't know if we should necessarily label the day or like this communism as being evil, and that we, or the day as being educational for students because they don't have the knowledge on this ideology. I think I disagree with that.
Well, that's, let me correct your thinking. That's not me calling it the evils of communism, okay? That's Governor Ron DeSantis saying
right.
The evils.
Okay.
You know, the evils of communism. Just make sure, you know, that you understand I'm not, you know, he's
right,
saying that
right.
Florida students will now learn the evils of communism, okay? Aditi.
I will also right. have to say that I disagree with Governor DeSantis with this one, because as Jenna did say, a lot of our history classes do talk about communism in general, like world history, and then even in U.S. history too. And we do learn about like not just like the mass murders that happened, but like the violations of freedoms and religion and like other like criminalization activities and things like that. It is already part of many of like a lot of our curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But for the people who don't take these classes, or like even for the people who don't take these classes, we still do talk about it, but it's not like, it's not as detailed as some of our history classes. And again, naming it the evils of communism, that's, it's making it sound as if we're like, that everyone in Florida is an anti-communist, mm-hmm. or not, I don't know if people
mm-hmm.
Support it or not, but like, it's just generalizing communism. And I don't think many people would, you know, be satisfied with that.
Okay. Well, also, what about the hypocrisy? Do you see any hypocrisy in this law requiring you to be informed about communism? What about what's happening in your own country? We're requiring you to know about communism, but we are denying you to know about your own history of the United States and America. When you think about, we cannot teach about slavery. We need to be careful what's said. That was, when I read that was my thing. Like, well, what about the history that's happened right here? So you're telling teachers they can't teach that. They can't teach slavery, can't teach about racism, but we can teach all we want about the evils of communism. Do you see any hypocrisy, or is it just me?
No, I do see some hypocrisy. I think as citizens of the United States and just, you know, living here in general, we should be educated on the history of our own country before we, you know, go on. Obviously, it's good to learn about other countries as well, but we should be fully educated in the country that we live in, about the country that we live in. And the fact that we're deprived of this knowledge is just ridiculous.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. Adding on to Aditi's statement, if the governor is using the phrase "evils of communism" to describe like the comparison between these communist countries and our own like democracy, I think we should definitely be learning about the evil ways that our country has in the past sometimes created issues. And I've seen a lot of, I just lost my train of thought, but essentially, yes, when Dr. Holyfield, you mentioned like the hypocrisy, mm-hmm. We should be learning about our own country. And if we are creating an entire day or celebrate or honoring right. a day to learn about all of these issues that a different country has, and essentially comparing how our country does not have these issues, then we should also be bringing to light what issues our country has had. And really the reason that we learn history is to make sure that all of those issues are just not never repeated again. But to this day, we still have issues with racism, which is essentially kind of goes hand in hand with slavery. Mm. So we should be being educated on these issues more so because we still have these issues present today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any other comments before we move on? There are so many topics. I'm trying to rush them all, get them all in. This will probably be our last politics wrap edition until, I don't know, August, early September. And, you know, there's ongoing. I can imagine what it'll be like when we come back from summer break. The massacre at Buffalo Supermarket was the deadliest in the U.S. this year. A gunman embracing a white supremacist ideology opened fire at a supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood of Buffalo, killing 10 people, wounding 3 more. 11 were black, 2 were white. A manifesto attributed to the shooter appeared online, repeatedly invoking the racist idea that white Americans were at risk of being replaced by people of color. The view is known as replacement theory. Once linked to the far-right fringe, it's become increasingly mainstream. According to the FBI, hate crimes in the U.S. surged to the highest level in 12 years. What are your thoughts? What are your comments?
Dr. Holyfield, obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I do believe, remember reading an article saying that shooter was 18 years of age.
Yes, you are right.
I think it's so hard to imagine such a young person having so much hatred towards or having this essentially war, we're assuming, I suppose. Actually, no, we're not assuming because, yes,
no.
We know
right.
that it was a racially motivated violent action. Maybe because I haven't really had too much experience with thankfully, others my age having this racially mm-hmm. motivated hatred. But it's so hard for me to imagine what environment and what you would have learned to have this hatred as such a young person.
Yeah. Aditi, comments, your thoughts?
I was actually very surprised and shocked when I heard about this incident because it's just unbelievable how in 2022 like kids, he's just mm-hmm. 18 years old, mm-hmm. a kid is capable of, you know, having so much hate and then killing what, 10 people at a supermarket?
Yeah.
For what? Because he doesn't like the way they look or
Well,
you know,
let me
it was racist, right?
Well, like excuse me for interrupting, but just to give you a little bit more information, his manifesto repeatedly invoked the replacement theory. And the replacement theory says, you know, that white people are being replaced by people of color and Jewish folks. If you remember when they had the in Virginia, and they were marching and they were saying, Jews will not replace us, okay? That is replacement theory. The theory that, again, Jews and people of color are replacing white folks here in the United States. So that's the basis, supposedly the basis of his behavior, that he was, you know, tied up and believed in the replacement theory. And his plan was, after he left the grocery store, that he was going to go down the street and just shoot.
He wasn't finished.
Yeah, he wasn't finished. And he had planned it. I mean, he had been to the store earlier, I think like a month or so before, just to kind of case it out, you know, to see. Mm-hmm. And he had done his homework and found that this was a predominantly black area, and this would be the ideal place to go. And it also really did hurt the area. It did a lot of damage. This was an area where it was a food desert. They did not have any. It took them a long time to get this major grocery store, I think it was Tops, to build there. And they did, and the store has been successful, and the residents have just been thrilled with it. It has really become a part of the community. So he did his homework and identified the ideal place to go to wipe folks out. So the replacement theory seems to be the basis.
That's still heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. The fact that he prepared to do this and then he still wasn't finished.
Right.
Even like when the police were coming. I just had a question though, like, did he not understand? Well, did he know that he wasn't going to get away with this? Or, like, was he prepared to go to jail or something? Because
I can't really answer that, but I would think that, you know, he was motivated by the replacement theory, and consequently, you know, the repercussions that he may receive were insignificant, okay? Mm-hmm. That he was willing to lay his life on the line to wipe out people of color so that they would not be multiplying, and that therefore that be those fewer to replace mm-hmm. white folks. I mean, that's the way that I understand it, okay? But I don't know what he knew and what he thought, you know, actually. You know, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then President Biden emphatically states, oh, this must stop. And I'm not belittling what he said, but my question is, how do you stop this? I mean, what you look back and you think, what could they have done to, and I mean they, I mean those in the store, to prevent this? Now, he had a history of having some problems in high school. In high school, he had written something, and they thought that he was suicidal and homicidal, and he was sent to a mental health facility, and they felt they let him go. They didn't think that it was that important, that significant. So this happened, I guess, like the year before, because he had already graduated from high school at this point. So maybe back in you know, 2021. So he did have that. But he didn't verbalize, or he did not manifest behaviors or thoughts that indicated that he needed psychological, you know, medical intervention. So how do you stop something like this? I mean, and I don't know that you got, I mean, this is just rhetorical, you know? How do you stop somebody like this?
I think... Sorry, did you go ahead?
No, go ahead, go ahead.
I think one question that comes to mind is, because it was a supermarket,
And because it was a gun violence, I don't want to say event, occurrence, it makes me question how secure like gun laws are for public areas. Don't really know how comfortable I would be knowing that people could just bring weaponry into kind of like secluded, not secluded, but like kind of closed areas like supermarkets where these things could happen. And in regards to, I feel like that, like if they had kind of closed off or maybe been more strict about weapons, essentially, it would be a lot harder for someone to have this bit large of a scale of a violent occurrence if it were a, I don't know, like a knife or in my opinion, I feel like it would have been a lot easier to stop him if it hadn't been a gun. And kind of like answering, I did these questions before.
But you, excuse me, you know, guns are the way now today. I mean, the knives and all that, you know, they're passe. So, I mean, I know what you're saying and I understand.
Right.
But if anything's going to happen, it's going to be with a gun. It's not going to be with a knife because you got to get too close up on people. Let me ask you to hold your thoughts. We're going to take a break, but we'll return. You're tuned in to 411 Team.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Just tuning in, program is 411 Teen. This is Politics Wrap, and we are looking at events that are occurring locally, state, and nationally. Did you all have any other comments you wanted to state about the Buffalo massacre? We have a new person joining us, Danny. We had been talking about the Buffalo massacre at the supermarket. Did you have any thoughts or any comments on that? Okay. Jenny Adida, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, yeah. So adding on to your previous question about, like, what could have been prevented. Honestly, with these events, it's so unpredictable. Like, gun shootings in general are so unpredictable, especially when you're just a high schooler and you're just, you know, you come to a grocery store, you just see a teenager. You're not going to think much of it. But then suddenly, you know, you pull out a gun and then you start shooting people.
Has to be a horrible, traumatic event. Can you imagine that? Ugh.
I can't imagine it.
Mm-mm.
But then again, it goes back to gun laws, as Jenna stated. Like, I don't know if gun laws are, you know, really, they're questionable at this point because of all the incidents that happened so far.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Okay, well, moving right along, Virginia Thomas, Jenny, as she's known, is the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. She's a conservative activist. She pressed Arizona lawmakers after the 2020 election to set aside Joe Biden's popular vote victory and choose a clean slate of electors. This is according to an email obtained by the Washington Post. She encouraged lawmakers to intervene because the vote was marred by fraud, she said. She also played a role in the scheme to keep Trump in office by substitution of the will of the legislators for the will of the voters. So forget what the voters want. We'll go with the legislators. So that's why she was trying to do that. Jenny Thomas' behavior raises concerns of potential conflict for her husband, who may face related attempts to overturn the 2020 election. She sent emails to Mark Meadows, Trump's chief of staff, pressing him to reverse the election. What are your thoughts about this and Jenny Thomas? And what kind of circumstances, what place does it put the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas in? Jenna?
I think it's really funny that she's trying to kind of put out there that this is a fraud. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember kind of reading an article saying how she was saying that the citizens have, or like the electors have the right and the responsibility to like fight against fraud, I think essentially mm-hmm. is what she was saying. And yet she is trying to kind of do things that in other people's eyes may seem fraudulent. I don't really understand. I mean, I think when you are kind of in that platform where mm-hmm. your kind of spouse or people around you are political figures, I think it's more important to, like, very important to kind of keep in mind how you are kind of presented to the public. And I understand that her actions can have consequences on her husband. You said he's
a Supreme Court justice.
Ah, okay, I see.
Mm-hmm. Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court justice, 1 of 9.
Yeah, I don't really fully understand, but I don't know. I'm still trying to process why.
I can feel you.
Like, yeah.
What is this madness? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I feel you. Yeah.
From what I got out of this, mm-hmm. I honestly think that the main idea is that you should plan your moves carefully or else there will be consequences. And that's kind of what's happening right now.
I mean, and yet she and her husband say, you know, that they don't really discuss what she does is independent of what he does and vice versa. But I don't know. I mean, she's out there advocating and then he has to make judgment on exactly what she's doing directly. You know, maybe not on her, but the behaviors are there. Is this fraudulent? Is it not? And it seems like it puts him in a real difficult, precarious situation,
I think,
to say
like,
the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they like should have probably communicated a little bit more, kind of got to know, you know, more about the topics that are being advocated, and just kind of, I feel like this was like a misunderstanding with communication, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Danny, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm not too familiar with the topic at hand, but when it comes to the whole discussion of whether we should reverse an election decision, it kind of goes back to whether we can like rely on the policies that have been set in place. I'm not sure if this like bringing up of like whether to reverse a decision is recent, because if she's trying to advocate to change this decision 2 years into Biden's term, then it's a little bit concerning.
Well, let me just make it clear for you. All of this started shortly after January 6th, okay? And it's still, I mean, it's continued. So initially, you know, she started with the Arizona legislators, okay, trying to get them to set aside Biden's popular vote victory. And she was pressing them, so that was very early on, pressing them to choose a clean slate of electors and throw out basically Biden's victory. And then she went to Mark Meadows, who was also Trump's chief of staff, pressing him. some of the problems, though, now is we're talking about the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He may have to rule and, you know, is having to look at some of the very issues that she was supporting. Not her particularly. I mean, she's not the one, but the issues of whether, you know, the election was fraudulent, how the roles that people played in this election. So that's where the problem comes. It just seems like wives, spouses of folks who are in politics should walk a tightrope. And she's saying, hey, you know, I'm independent. This is where I was coming from. This is where I sit. Yet her husband has to rule on these things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's what the issue is. That's where things are. And I don't know, if you all don't have any more thoughts, we can move on and think about it over the summer, because the issue will not be gone. It'll still be there. So I'm sure when you come back, we can further discuss it. Another thing that's going on, the COVID wave is accelerating across the U.S. with a 53% jump in cases and rise in hospitalizations. Maine is the only state to report a slight decline in the last 2 weeks. Yet 1 in 3 million, one in three Americans are saying the pandemic is over. How do we address this? The numbers are saying the pandemic is not over. What do we do? I mean, do you have suggestions as to how we address this? What do we do? I mean, you know, Pennsylvania is now saying you got to wear your mask again. It's getting that bad. Schools are closing down. And I mean, and that's just one. I just happen to know about Pennsylvania. But it's happening, even though school will be out shortly. They still have, up north, they still have another month easily of school. So the COVID wave is accelerating again. And I think some of those researchers said, if we aren't careful, we're going to see another rise, and we have. We've seen the Omicron, and now this is coming. So I just, you know, what are your thoughts about it?
Honestly, at this point, it's just surprising that people think that the pandemic is over, especially when there's a spike in COVID-19 cases. Mm-hmm. Like whenever I go out, I'm normally the only person wearing a mask in the room, mm-hmm. and it's kind of concerning. But I think people are taking it lightly. They don't understand the severity of it. Even like, especially the people who like receive their vaccines, they're like, okay, like I got the vaccine, I'm safe 100%. Like nothing's gonna happen to me. But that really isn't the case, uh-huh. considering that COVID like mutates and like changes
right
consistently. So I think people should stay more aware of their surroundings and like probably, you know, just take care of themselves more. Uh-huh. Like avoid crowds, or like if you feel like you have any symptoms, like stay at home. Don't pass it on to other people, or like try to avoid you know, like basic, keep your basic COVID stuff protocol to protect mm-hmm. yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other comments?
I think just building on what Aditi said, she's definitely right that we should be still so aware of what we are doing and how we are living our lives to make sure that we are being safe, because COVID is still very much an issue. But I also know that just from my classmates and peers and people that I interact with, a lot of people just really are hating the mask. They're just tired of this whole pandemic. And I think especially because summer is approaching, there's really not anything that, unless we change their minds, which I don't believe will happen, I don't think there's anything that, like, I don't know if the state can, like, mandate masks, especially if we won't be actively, like, in schools and some people won't be at their workplaces. A lot of people will be on vacation. And I feel like a lot of people will probably hate what I say, but I think
who cares?
Even if it is, I think even if it is summer vacation, kind of maybe limiting how big crowds are and kind of limiting like attendance for certain like events or certain things, like just on a minute, like a smaller scale, like my church still has kind of restriction on how many attendees can come each week. So I think this is obviously like on a smaller scale, but for larger scales, for, I don't know, like in Florida, we have Disney World, Disney World. Yes. I think I had a little buffer there. I think if they close down again, then that will just create just another whole issue. And realistically, with the financial aspect, I don't know how they would be able to close down because they had been closed down during the actual pandemic. But maybe like restricting how many people are coming, if that is possible. And like that similar concept with all of these other attractions and events, I think that would probably be the most realistic way we can kind of maybe possibly prevent another big like surge of COVID cases.
Danny, any thoughts?
Yeah, so adding on to what Aditi and Jenna said, so over the past weekend I went to New Jersey to visit some family, and so I got to see firsthand how people are like behaving now with a lot of the laxer policies. And so on the flight itself, there were not as many like mask wearers as there used to be when it was regulated. But when I was on the train to New York, I was pleasantly surprised to see that a lot of people were still wearing masks. And New York is a hot spot for COVID cases again. The cases there are on the rise. And so seeing that people are still, there are still people who realize that this is an issue that we can't just ignore. And so when I saw that, I was happy to see that people do still understand it. But I can see what Aditi and Jenna are saying when there are a lot of people who just want this to be over. And unfortunately, it's not something that we can just wish it to go away. And in all honesty, when it comes to what we can do, I think the only course of action that's really there is to just listen to what public health officials are saying. I mean, they're people who have dedicated their lives to figuring out what the best way is for people to move forward. And it may not be the most ideal choice for everyone, but if we want this to truly put an end to this and bring it down to levels such as the flu, where it's not as there, obviously the flu has deadly cases, but we found a way to control the flu and make it less deadly. And in order to do that, all that we can really do is listen to what these officials are saying. And they advocate for vaccines, they advocate for mask usage. And when we follow those policies, we saw the effect. We saw a decrease in cases. We saw people having weaker symptoms. Like the symptoms that they get if people are vaccinated are not nearly as deadly as they were originally. So I think when it comes to what we should do about COVID, we just have to listen to what the officials say.
Well, you raised some real good points because we do know now that most people, when they do get COVID, it's not as severe. Any other comments about the rise with the COVID? Well, at this point, it's almost we don't have the time to go into another issue. I think the next issue we were going to discuss was just the baby formula. And that seems to be very harrowing for young parents, for parents, period, of infants. It is a problem, but President Biden has invoked the Defense Production Act to ensure manufacturers have the necessary ingredients to make safe and healthy formula. I want to extend my sincere appreciation to you three. I know it's the end of school, and I appreciate your time and sharing your thoughts. So it's time out for this edition of 411 Teen. Again, many thanks to my 411 Teen panelists. Special appreciation to my listening audience for your ear and your time. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. The 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to past episodes at WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.